It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. To restore American shipbuilding and bring down China's dominance, the Trump administration plans to impose new port fees on Chinese ships. The penalties come after an investigation during the Biden administration into China's maritime logistics and shipbuilding that found unfair trade practices. As trade tensions flare between the world's two largest economies, we look at it from the perspective of Great Lakes shipping and a busy shipyard. Patrick Kelly is CEO of Fraser Industries in Superior. The maritime company oversees Fraser Shipyards, which builds and repairs vessels of all sizes. Patrick, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Fraser Shipyards in Superior dates back to 1890. Can you give us a brief tour of the yard? What ships you're working on right now in the dry docks, where those vessels are from?
Sure. We have both a repair side and a new construction side to Fraser Industries, Fraser Shipyard, and Lake Assault Boats today. On the repair side, we're a busy yard, especially January, February, and March. We could have up to 10, 11, 12 boats in on any given winter. Some in our dry dock, some simply dockside or elsewhere in the Duluth Superior Harbor Complex. And Great Lakers can come in any time of year for repairs, but typically concentrate around the winter months as they come off the water because of ice and weather. Year round, we also have an active new construction yard underway. We're building four vessels today, four contracts with the U.S. Navy. We have built vessels for each of the armed forces going back 5-6 years now, all except the Space Force. And we're still hopeful that someday we can get a Fraser component on something for our Space Force. So it's a busy place today. We do a lot of construction for police and fire boats as well. And we even manufacture a ski board and a wakeboard vessel as well.
Wow. Wow. To me, it's a bit surprising that there is new construction of ships in the works because this is China's territory, right? The White House says that the U.S. builds 0.2% of the world's ships. Compared to China's 74%, what is going on there?
Well, the vessels that we construct for the Navy and for others tend to be aluminum hulled. There are some that are steel hulled, but we are really building ships that are 200 feet or less in size. When you talk about the Chinese vessels being built, those involve competitors or competition for the Great Lakers that are on the water and that we repair regularly. And the Great Lakes is a battleground for Chinese-built vessels. Since 2010, approximately 19 or 20 or so vessels, Chinese-built, have made their way onto the Great Lakes as part of the Great Laker fleet. That's about 20% of the total vessels that move commodity product all over the Great Lakes today. So it's a sizable share just since 2010. We dug into this issue over the last 6 months, and you can strike a direct correlation for of older vessels, typically U.S. built, but others as well, other countries as well, that are now sidelined or no longer operating on the Great Lakes. They could come back into service, but they're no longer operating because they've been replaced by these Chinese-built Lakers since 2010.
The U.S., meanwhile, will start charging fees on Chinese-owned and operated and Chinese-built ships that are arriving at U.S. ports. Can you describe what's going on there with these unfair practices that the federal government sees?
Well, that's certainly being discussed, right? It's not yet law, but it sure looks like it's coming. The Chinese have been subsidizing their ship construction industry for decades, and that's the heart of the matter. An unfair trade practice has been set up, and how the world responds to that, we have a president who has identified this as an unfair trade practice. It sure looks like it when you look at the market share that the Chinese have in global boat building today. And so taking a stand and responding to it. And the question is, how does the rest of the world respond? Shame on us for allowing the Chinese to establish that position. But it's really a question from here, what are we going to do about it? And I think that's what's being debated.
It seems like at Fraser, though, you're trying to look at all pieces of the industry, repair, new construction, other types of vessels. Is that a way to get a handle on the industry?
Well, we think so. And it's a function of where we're located. We have a terrific location on Lake Superior as part of the Duluth Superior Harbor Complex. We have 100 acres of owned property today on lakefront, deep water access. We only use about 15 or 20 acres of that today. So we have a tremendous capability to expand or take on new projects, whether for the U.S. military, the Department of Defense, or other industries that are emerging all over North America. We also have an underemployed workforce. We have great people. We could employ a lot more if we had year-round work other than just our January, February, March repair season. We took an informal poll this last winter with our union boilermakers who would be interested in staying on and working 12 months out of the year if we could find the work. And about 350 or 400 people put their hands up and would like to continue working at the yard year round if we could find the work for them. So we've got a great workforce. We know we have construction people that could build infrastructure, about 1,200 construction contractors who are underemployed in the winter months between, say, October through May of each year. We could put them to work. We could build a bunch of this infrastructure and build larger vessels or more vessels as time goes on. So we have solutions here. We're a bit unique among shipyards. I think others on the Great Lakes are in similar positions. The shipyards on the East Coast, the West Coast, and the Gulf Coast have more constraints than we do. They're landlocked. They're maxed out in the way they can draw labor into those locations. I think it's time that we get thoughtful as a country and expand our manufacturing footprint back into the Great Lakes. We've been here since World War II. We built a lot of vessels then. We've allowed that to atrophy, and we have ourselves to ask why, but we know we can adjust and correct the situation as well.
Steel is usually the backbone of shipbuilding. It's the foundational material in many modern ships. How is the shipbuilding industry affected by the 25% tariffs on imported steel and aluminum?
Yeah, we buy American wherever we can. And as you know, Superior and Duluth handle the taconite, the precursor to steel manufacturing that goes on all over the Great Lakes. We would welcome expansion of U.S. steel manufacturing, more taconite moving through the Duluth Superior Harbor. We think we make a nice ecosystem, if you will, of additional manufacturing. We can put that steel to good use and building more boats. When we're not buying American, typically it's because our customers have requested a specific component from a particular vendor that can only be found overseas or offshore. We're always in discussions, though, with those customers to look for U.S.-sourced components where we can and where we can be successful.
Do you think would additional fees on China make China any less powerful in the shipbuilding and the maritime industry?
I can't necessarily comment about what the Chinese might do with a tariff structure, but I can absolutely comment that with additional investment in U.S. shipyards, could include Canadian shipyards as well, other shipyards in Europe, we can get much better at building boats, build them much faster for lower cost. We can absolutely replicate what's gone on in China. We know how to build boats. We know how to do them, how to do it efficiently. It's a matter of investment from here that puts us on a level playing field with our world competitors.
We're in the midst of economic uncertainty and shifting economic conditions and policies. How do you, as a CEO, plan your budgets and projects in this era of unsteady markets and changing conditions?
It is a challenging time for sure, but there have been many challenging times in our past and our future as well. You touched on it earlier when you mentioned all the different things that Fraser does today. We repair boats, we build new, we work with steel, we work with aluminum. By being diversified and working in a number of different markets with a number of different customers, we think that's the winning way here to weather the storm, if you will, or persevere through uncertainty ahead. We've had uncertain past as well. The shipyard has been operating since 1890, as you referenced. We think diversification is the way to work going forward here.
Patrick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Kate. I appreciate the opportunity.
That was Patrick Kelly, CEO of Fraser Industries in Superior, as we check in on Wisconsin's maritime industry amid ongoing tariffs and economic uncertainty. But it's customs brokers who are trying to keep pace with the calculations on duties and fees. Sandy Siegel is a licensed customs broker in Milwaukee and president and managing director of ME Day & Company. Sandy, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Great. Thanks, Kate. I'm really happy to be here today.
You oversee imports crossing into the U.S., and then you're processing duties and fees on goods. Can you help us understand your day-to-day work with your international partners since the start of the White House's tariffs?
That's a loaded question, but I'll do my best. It's obviously been quite chaotic and since January, and in particular the last month or so. But our typical day-to-day, I'll start with that. We help our customers, which are both importers and exporters, but in regards to the duties, our customers are, you know, buying goods from overseas. We help them with arranging the transportation from everywhere in the world and get the goods here, and then help them determine the correct duties to be paid, clear through other various government agencies like food and drug, things like that. But most importantly, in reference to all the tariffs and so forth, determining the proper classification and what duties apply and, you know, arranging for payment to customs.
Sandy, has the changing percentage of tariffs on various global trading partners, has that impacted what customs agents, customs officials are trying to calculate?
Oh, absolutely. I think for all of us in the trade, both, you know, private side customers, importers, us customs brokers, as well as customs themselves and the government, we are all scrambling a little bit, primarily due to the pace at which these executive orders are being announced and being put into place. So there hasn't been a lot of time to react and to plan as well as to implement, right? And to audit and so forth. So customs, U.S. Customs, you know, has a responsibility to ensure the proper duties are paid and collected. And I was recently at a conference where the Assistant Commissioner of Customs spoke and, you know, try to empathize with those of us in the audience that are all trying to keep up with the changes. What are they? And, you know, how do we make sure we're assessing the right duties and so forth? And again, because of the rapid pace in which things are changing, the programmers in the industry, the, you know, computer programmers have been challenged to keep up, to make sure we're calculating the right duties. Customs has said loud and clear, their software is not able to audit for it. So it's, they're relying on the importers and us customs brokers to make sure we're calculating it correctly.
Sandy, you have seen so many years in this industry, and I imagine you've gone through a lot in customs and trade over your 40 plus year career.
Yes.
Have you seen something like this before? What compares?
You know, in some ways, you know, many of us in the industry have said it's a little bit like some of the disruption we saw during the pandemic and then the supply chain meltdown that happened shortly after the pandemic. The way in which it's similar is, you know, all of a sudden things were completely disrupted. And, you know, during the pandemic and trade stopped for a while, right, as the world shut down. And then it exploded, right, because we were all purchasing things and buying like crazy. Then, you know, that caused freight rates to explode and escalate dramatically as the import volumes increased so quickly. Mm-hmm. The inability to plan or know what lies ahead, I think, for, you know, many of us in trade is similar in that regard.
Let's look at China now, in particular with your clients. President Trump, as we talk, has imposed tariffs of at least 145% on Chinese imports. There's the 125% retaliatory tariff by China on U.S. goods. What is the situation now with your clients, and has trade nearly stopped with China? What do you see?
Yeah, China in particular has had such a dramatic impact, and we do handle quite a large volume out of China. You know, a lot of customers, we had a great first quarter, and a lot of people overordered and stocked up on inventory, of course, because they were anticipating the new tariffs with the administration. So now is when, you know, we're really seeing it. So for importers, we have many importers that are, you know, still producing out of China, and they've put freight on hold and they're trying to ride it out. They're hoping that there'll be some negotiation and that will at least drop down from, you know, the 125%, which is again on top of other duties and the original 301 duties, but they can't hold on forever. So, you know, they're just trying to buy some time. And, you know, everybody predicts as inventories deplete, you know, that at some point they're, you know, we'll need to start bringing in those goods. Mm-hmm. But even some of our export clients have been impacted because of the retaliation, as you mentioned. They, you know, obviously our goods are not as competitive if you're selling to China. And we've had a couple orders canceled by the customers in China. I have one customer here who makes some pretty, you know, high value capital equipment, and they're moving the production to Canada so that they can produce the goods there, and it will no longer be a U.S. made good. And, you know, they'll still be able to get the sale. And so, yeah.
That's huge disruption to supply chains. Where are these goods being held, or what does that mean for the goods themselves?
Yeah, goods are being held per se in at the supplier's factory. So, you know, in other words, not, you know, holding the loading of goods and booking freight out of China. Even, you know, Trump 1.0 and the original China duties and the objective of motivating U.S. companies to move production out of China, it's just not that easy to move entire supply chains, as I'm sure you can imagine.
So as you look out at those choppy waters, if you will, are importers or exporters, are they experiencing any benefits from tariffs in this moment?
I honestly, and, you know, without getting political, I can honestly say I have not seen one company on either side, whether you're a manufacturer, a supplier, an importer, in any industry that has benefit. I can say that in all honesty. And there are situations I've seen that are really heartbreaking on, you know, smaller size companies that have frankly said this will put us out of business. I can't see anyone in at least the short term that has benefited from these duties in either direction.
Sandy, thank you for joining us.
Oh my goodness. Thank you, Kate. It's always a pleasure. Big fan, and thank you for having me on the show.
That was Sandy Siegel, a licensed customs broker in Milwaukee, president of ME Day & Company. Earlier, we spoke with Patrick Kelly, CEO of Fraser Shipyards in Superior. And a note, these conversations happened before the news this morning that the U.S. and China have temporarily agreed to slash tariffs while the two sides talk.